Order.
There are these things called facts.
Order.
Are there any questions without notice?
And question time welcomes Sue Cato, Principal Spin Doctor at Cato Council. Welcome.
Good evening, Robbie.
Is it an okay term to call you a spin doctor these days in this politically correct world?
The problem is I've been on a show on the ABC called Spin Doctors,
yes.
So as much as I'd probably like to duck it and call myself an incredibly thoughtful, glorious human being, it's probably a waste.
That's exactly what you are. No, not a waste. I mean,
thank
a spin doctor.
Thank you for the save there, Robbie. Thank you.
It's also welcome to Scott Wales, ABC News radio broadcaster, man who's across a lot of politics, of course. As we know, when Parliament is sitting, then you get to hear Parliament in all its glory via the news radio transmitters, don't you?
Indeed we do. And in fact, we often get calls, irate calls at times from listeners saying, what is this rubbish that's on at the moment? Where's Question Time? And so, well, we broadcast as well, you know.
I hope you listen to Question Time when it's being broadcast.
I do. I usually record it and make my own podcast of it. It's the biggest podcast that anyone has ever downloaded.
And it's also welcome to Chris Berg, Research Fellow at the Institute of Public Affairs. Hello, Chris.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for stepping in as well. Late notice. We had a late cancellation.
No, I'm just ready to jump whenever Radio National calls me. Yeah. Just hop straight in the car anytime.
Is that a jump to the left or the right?
Oh, yeah. We started already, haven't we?
It was Rocky Horror. Why are you guys thinking I'm talking politics? My God.
Well, we are going to talk politics, of course. Who can believe we're up to week 4 of the federal election campaign? Hasn't it gone quickly?
Oh, no. It's just been fantastic. I can't believe it's only been 28 days.
I've never heard that response to anything about election. It's just been great. I love it. It's wonderful.
We usually broadcast Question Time, so anything seems quite exciting.
And can I also just make the point that if that's his opening line, what else can we believe? Anything he says is it.
This past week, of course, has been 7 days of serious policy for both parties. We finally got into the marrow of the discussions. Finally, we moved to some real substance. Voters are finally able to look at how each party compares. Let's start Question Time with what I'm describing as the Coalition's key platform for this election.
And as a result of the $66 million investment, of which $16 million I hope will come from a incoming Coalition government, the famous Cadbury chocolate tours will be able to commence.
The serious
again.
Business at last. Tony Abbott with the policy the country has been waiting for. And here's how PM Kevin Rudd responded.
I reckon that's waffle cubed, mate.
Sorry, Kevin, that's not the kind of waffle we're talking about in this case.
We're talking polywaffle, aren't we?
What, are polywaffles still around?
I know. Wrong brand. Wrong company.
Not Cadbury.
We're not really allowed to talk about
Roundtree.
I'm afraid you get a point buses. Taken off as an ABC broadcaster. Now, I did mention before that we have imaginary buzzers on this particular quiz as well. Let's get into round one, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, you can join in wherever you're listening across Australia by using the buzzer, which is in fact your mobile phone. The text number here, 0418 226 576. On Twitter, we're at RN Drive. All right. The Coalition released its savings this week, claiming $31.6 billion in budget savings. PM Kevin Rudd accused them of having a $10 billion black hole. In an unusual move, the Treasury put out a statement distancing itself from Labor's figures. Here's opposition finance spokesperson Joe Hockey.
Kevin Rudd has now been blown out of the water by his own public servants.
Joe Hockey hinting at the possible new powers public servants might enjoy should the Coalition win, playing with naval armoury, it seems. Scott Wales, this one is for you. First question. Black holes are a recurring theme in politics these days, it seems. We all know they're more at home in science. In 90 seconds or less, can you give us a succinct précis on the theory behind a black hole, who first suggested it, and how a black hole relates to quantum field theory in curved space-time?
A boffin-y type first posed the question of black holes. I think it was the Treasury Secretary of Genoa in Italy in the late 1600s.
I'm giving you half a point for creative response. It was, in fact, apparently first suggested by geologist John Michell in a letter to the Royal Society in 1783. But we might keep that question for when Robin
he
Williams...
He was shadow science.
He may. Yeah. Let's concentrate on the political black holes and not the one that Liberal candidate James Diaz has disappeared into, it seems. They pop up regularly. In the 2010 election treasury, analysis identified a black hole in the Coalition's costings, you may recall, going back 3 years. Scott Wales, how much was it? Was it $4 billion, $11 billion, or $14 billion?
It was $14 billion.
You're absolutely sure of that?
I'm pretty sure of that.
Sue Cato, what do you think it was?
I want to back Scott up on this point.
Do you? Very supportive, but incorrect. Chris Berg, I'll give you a go.
Right, Scott.
No, sorry, now it's just the roll of the dice. It was $11 billion.
It was $11 billion.
Which means we're improving, which is great. Which Australia, we're just getting better. It seemed like a really bad 3 years, but we're $1 billion up.
That's true. It's a very good way of putting it. At the time, of course, opposition finance spokesman Andrew Robb said there was a difference of opinion, that's how he put it, with Treasury, but it doesn't necessarily represent a mistake. It's a difference of opinion. Of course, on this occasion, it seems that the Coalition is a little more eager to accept the costings from Treasury compared to 2010. Chris, your question, and still on the money that we're chasing, the Coalition promised this week to give $3 million, not quite $11 billion, but $3 million to which sport? And you've got three choices on this one. Was it cricket? God knows, they could do with it. I don't know if it would win an Ashes, but maybe even a test. That would have been nice. Was it swimming? Would buy a lot of still knocks. Or was it netball?
I'm fairly sure it was netball. I just remember the visuals. I just remember the visuals of Tony Abbott hanging around with a lot of young netballers.
I don't know if you get the point for the visuals or not, but
no,
it is the correct answer.
Surely netballs, yeah.
It is. The pledge was for $3 million for the 2015 Netball World Championship. Let's hear from Tony Abbott on netball.
Margie has often said to me that netball deserves the limelight. Well, darling, you're right.
Tony Abbott there, Netball Australia, just glad that his wife is a fan of their sport and not something more obscure like jousting or jelly wrestling.
I like that this is the way policy is made.
Do you think?
Like, yeah, I feel like some chocolate. Let's go to Tasmania.
And you know, they really made a major step forward to make netball a much more popular game when Tony Abbott started talking about it as a contact sport. You know, now we might go prime time.
Well, could we combine those two policy announcements? I mean, could we see netball and the Cadbury factory being connected together? Could we see chocolate being handed out halfway through a netball game?
Not very health and safety, but under a coalition government, I'm sure it'll happen.
We could have netball played with chocolate wrestling. I don't know.
That is an interesting proposition. Very interesting proposition.
As an ex-player, what can I say?
There may be an industrious listener as we speak, putting that plan into force. You're listening to RN Drive. Robbie Buck filling in for Julian Morrow, and we are in the midst of question time this week. Sue Cato from Cato Council, Chris Berg from the IPA, and Scott Wales from ABC News Radio are my contestants today. Sue, for you, still on costings, I'm going to play you a grab from one of the debates this week. And don't give me those eyes when I tell you that. You need to tell me what the question is.
And ladies and gentlemen, this is a setup, but keep going.
No, it's not. And who's being asked the question? Let's take a listen.
I just think that the forklift driver in Mount Druitt shouldn't be paying his taxes, so a pretty little lady lawyer on the North Shore...
Yes, it's been cut off, by the way, so that we don't give away the answer. Invoking the long-standing class divide in Australia, otherwise known as Sydney Harbour, who's being asked the question, do you think, and what is it about?
Tony Abbott was being asked the question, and his response was that the questioner had it all wrong because it was going to be evil big business paying it, not the taxpayers.
Yeah, did he have a point?
Well, Tony Abbott or the questioner? Sorry. I would suggest that if big business is having to pay it, it'll pass through the cost, so ultimately we'll be paying it one way or another.
Chris Berg, what's your take on that one?
Of course. Yeah. No question. The incidents will lie on the shareholders and taxpayers and consumers. It'll flow through, of course. I mean, someone has to pay this stuff. It doesn't come from nowhere. There isn't a big business hole that you can just rip money out of. So I think it's madness to talk about money as if it's free.
Right, on the quiz question time this week, we're just about ready for round two.
Order!
Round two.
Order!
That's it, Queensland. Queensland's everywhere.
At last, we do get to head to Queensland. One of the key battlegrounds, of course, for this election, so much so that both leaders have chosen to launch their campaigns there. Tony Abbott told the crowd that they have a chance to kick out the worst government in Australian history. And to back up that tough talk, he brought out his big guns. Not his biceps on this occasion. His daughters, Bridget and Frances.
Today, we want to tell you about our dad, Tony Abbott.
A little bit of a pause there, wasn't there? Yeah. What, do you think she'd forgotten for a moment, Sukarno?
I think it was probably adding the excitement to the moment and the pause and the build-up.
Dramatic
and,
pause.
And getting, you could hear the excitement in the audience.
I thought she said dud.
I don't think she did.
I think you're getting into the Upper North Shore accent there, Scott, and I think that's class stuff. I think you should be a little, you know. And
yeah. Okay, I'll back in my box.
Sorry, Chris Berg.
I like the idea that there would have been an element of suspense, like my dad, and everybody goes, who?
Who could it be? Well, Chris Berg, we have seen a lot more children in this election campaign, more than any other election, it seems. Is this a direction that you think Australia should be travelling in?
No, I don't, but it's going to happen. It's happened around the world. Part of the reason I think that it's happened quite recently in the last couple of years is because family has been portrayed, because Julia Gillard, you know, has no children, so both her opponents on either side of politics sort of propped up their children to say, oh, well, you know, we are part of a working family. But the politicians and the parties, they talk about families all the time, so it's not surprising they'd want to show us their families, so that they can speak to our families.
So, Kato, you advise people on how they should represent themselves. Do you encourage them to use their families for such a task?
To be serious for a moment, the moment you play your family in, the families become targets as well. So we've seen, you know, on Twitter and everywhere else, all these kids attacked. Should they be in? Should they not be in? The moment you play a wife in, you know, in Therese Rain's case, they can talk about her business because she's being used politically. You can't say my family's out of this. So it's actually, you know, it's got its upsides, it's got its downsides. I think one of the big changes is the age of the leaders we've got at the moment. So the kids are at an age and that they are socially engaged, they are in the media, and they're actually performing pretty well. I mean, if they were duds, you'd sort of, you know, they'd wave once to the camera and they'd be off.
But it's a fairly big choice, a big decision, is it, for a politician to make that choice?
Well, you know, it's politics. I mean, is it going to work? Is it not going to work? And I think if you found that there was really major pushback on the kids and the wives being involved, that they'd suddenly disappear. So they've got to be working for the leaders for them to be playing this role.
I mean, presumably the kids don't go into it sort of reluctantly. I don't imagine behind the scenes they're all going...
Not if there's free chocolate involved.
Well, except for that. I mean, but again, we're talking about older kids here. I mean, that may not be enough of an incentive.
But you know, it's interesting, these kids, and you know, we've all sort of, I've grown up and known lots of them, they're really, really loyal to their families. And
which is understandable.
But they've grown up in political families.
And what's at stake now?
And looking after their parents. And, you know, they all know their risks. I mean, they've been in the family home when these debates have been going on. I mean, they're pretty tuned in.
That said, I'm no scientist nor mathematician, but I was under the understanding that Tony Abbott had three daughters, not just two. Why did we only see two there?
Well, three might have blown him off the stage.
Might have been too much.
One's overseas and studying, I think.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
I thought you'd have a rational answer for us. Chris, thank you very much.
No, sorry. I know this is supposed to be fun, but I just want us to take it incredibly seriously.
Yeah, all right. Yes, out. Let's carry on. We're in the middle of question time here on Friday Drive. Now, what followed after that little representation on stage at the launch was a heartfelt dedication to their father, understandably. Frances and Bridget described him as a man who wears many hats, not all of them hard hats, and not all high-vis jackets either. I'm going to read out a list they used. There are two false descriptions in here, and I need you to tell me which two are false. I think this is for you, Scott Wells.
Okay.
Volunteer lifesaver, that has a hat. Netball dad, I guess you could wear a hat for that. Firefighter, definitely has a hat.
Mm-hmm.
CrossFit enthusiast, hat optional.
Mm.
Rhodes scholar, yes, it's got a mortarboard. Author, that's a thinking cap, I'd take it. Member of Opus Dei, I haven't been involved myself, I don't know if they wear hats. Hopefully, maybe they do. Politician, sometimes they wear their hats.
Yeah.
Husband, all husbands have a hat, usually sits on the back of the car.
Yeah.
And father, same as above. Which two of those shouldn't belong to that list?
Opus Dei.
I would say Opus Dei.
Is not in that list.
There were a lot of rumours that Tony Abbott was in Opus Dei for a while. It was around about the same time that there were a lot of rumours that The Da Vinci Code was a book worth reading.
Was it about the same time, just before the movie came out and was promoted as a film worth seeing?
There was no rumour about it being worth watching, though. Opus Dei, yes.
And the other one I'll say, just because I'm sure all of the others have been worn by him at some stage, CrossFit.
CrossFit is 100% correct. Right. You picked the two of them that were frauds within that. He is not a member of Opus Dei.
Although I could see him in CrossFit. If anyone's ever seen what CrossFit fitness people do, it's insane. Yes. It seems really right
it's
up
it's actually a
Tony's alley,
I reckon. It's a hard word, isn't it? Exercise regime, isn't it?
It's like a cross between aerobics and the routines they did in Full Metal Jacket.
Well, the only reason he can't have done it is because he doesn't know about it then.
Well, that's right. Yeah. If he saw it, he would be in. He would be totally in.
No doubt he's listening tonight, and the image of him out there is...
Tony, get into CrossFit.
That's right. Straight away.
No, Tony, you will. Yeah. You'll really like it.
So about rumours, though, obviously rumours are started, scurrilous rumours at times as well, but how damaging can they be?
Oh, very damaging. I mean, it depends how much currency they get, how exciting they are, and basically how much people like or don't like the person the rumour's being spread about. Mm. But, you know, there can be some, and the other much bigger deal is, do they matter? You know, if the rumour is that Tony is actually a CrossFit nut, that's not going to be that much of a problem because most people think he's fit and a nut and cross sometimes. But, you know, had it been actually that he was a cross-dresser rather than a CrossFit person... That might be interesting in some sections of the community, not others, because they would be totally fine with cross-dressing.
Well, of course, Alexander Downer got some extra votes. Chris Berg, are there little teams of rumour mongerers, you know, faceless men and women in the back rooms of political parties coming up with plausible rumours for politicians?
Look, we all need hobbies. That's all I'm saying. To be honest, most of these things I don't think come from the parties themselves, and particularly these days.
Not all of them.
But most of the creative rumours, I think, happen on the internet or Twitter or blogs or that sort of thing. And I think the parties are now finding themselves reacting to stuff that's happening more than they are able to drive that sort of scurrilous stuff.
Mm. What's really interesting, and when you saw early in the campaign, Tony having an issue talking about, you know, suppositories and talking about gay marriage being, you know, fashionable, et cetera, and some of the other interesting contributions. You saw the memes, you saw the fake billboards and the fake ads going all over Twitter. You know, that wasn't an accident.
All right, Chris Berg, the next question for you. The who's who of the Liberal Party attended the coalition launch on Sunday. Queensland Premier Campbell Newman addressed the audience and channeled one of the finest political minds in history.
That we can do better, that we must do better, and that we will do better.
Very fine words indeed. Unfortunately, it's a verbatim quote from somebody else. Who was it from?
I'm not sure. I remember the argument, but I can't remember exactly who it was. I'm just going to say it's Ronald Reagan. They're using a lot of Ronald Reagan at the moment.
It's not Ronald Reagan. In fact, whilst Ronald Reagan, some people thought might have been fictional before he became the president, just because he was a movie star.
Yeah, people don't understand the difference between movies and, like, they say actor. Oh, you mean fake?
Well, indeed, this is from a fictional character. It's from a television show. Any ideas?
No. Michael Scott from The Office? No.
That we can do better, that we must do better, and that we will do better.
Was it West Wing?
Yes, it was. West Wing. Yes. Let's take a little listen to the answer.
And we can do better, and we must do better, and we will do better.
And very well delivered there by
Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen, yes. Jed Bartlett from The West Wing, played by Martin Sheen. Of course, he's not the only politician to have quoted a fictional politician from elsewhere, from across the movies and television sphere. Of course, we remember Anthony Albanese, who was busted quoting, who was it, Michael Douglas in the American President.
And, of course, he delivered the line much better than Michael Douglas ever did.
Did he?
But did you guys, listening to Obama this week, doing the Martin Luther King spiel, did you hear how much he sounded like Martin Luther King?
The cadence.
The cadence, dropping off the end of words... I'm sure that was a coincidence.
Yeah. not virtually at all.
I just raise it.
Yeah. Definitely a coincidence. Odd in passing.
Yeah. Just happened to be 50 years. How about that? Is there? So
he didn't even know he was speaking on that.
Chris Berg, is there anything wrong with quoting fictional politicians if you are a real politician?
I think our politicians massively overquote as it is. They use far too many catchy phrases that they've heard from 50 years ago. Or you know, all these people, they grew up wanting to be politicians. So you just know on their iPods or Walkmans or whatever they had in the past, they're listening to like the best of Ronald Reagan's speeches and they're thinking, yeah, that guy. And then they use it in their own speeches. I think it's incredibly tedious.
That said, I mean, Scott Wales is there.
So I've got really strong views about
you,
that.
And you delivered them very well.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it.
Scott Wales, do you think because with the age of the internet that there are so many great speeches available to us now, is it unlike politicians of 20, 30 years ago who might have heard one or two of the great ones, now people are listening to so many more, is it almost impossible to escape plagiarising?
Well, yeah, and maybe perhaps you get a little bit too of people plagiarising without even realising it because they just thought, well, actually that just sunk in one night when I was up late watching season 6 of The West Wing for the fifth time and it just sort of became...
I was very drunk and in the morning I thought of it.
And I'm sorry, let's face it, the actors have got scriptwriters who are actually paid more than most political scriptwriters, yeah, so there's clearly got to be quality.
Which is why, you know, in the series 12 of The West Wing, you'll see... they'll talk constantly about moving forward and a new way. Now, that is script writing.
Exactly.
All right. You're listening to Friday Drive here on RN. Robbie Buck filling in for Julian Morrow. And we're in the midst of question time. You may have noticed Sue Cato from Cato Council is with us, Chris Berg from the IPA, and Scott Wales from ABC News Radio. Let's carry on. Sue Cato, a question for you. In his launch speech, opposition leader Tony Abbott made a promise to do two things on day one of a coalition government. Pick the two from this list. Prepare legislation to repeal the carbon tax, cut the company tax rate, give directions to start Operation Sovereign Borders, Coalition's plan to combat people smuggling, or rewrite a business model for the National Broadband Network. Which two of those have they pledged to attack on their first day?
It's a very good
question.
They're
also sexy, aren't they?
No, they're also sexy. I could actually almost argue that one way or another that you could sort of almost any of them would be in. I'd be very surprised if it was the NBN straight up and the carbon tax and the company tax.
You are correct.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. So that leaves three out of those three. Which other one are you taking out? It's the prepare legislation to repeal the carbon tax. Give directions. Oh no, you're right. There's two left. Sorry.
Thank you. And did you like the fact that I just let you go there yourself?
Yes.
I did. I thought I'd leave you with
that. I just liked watching the dawn.
Unfortunately, I had it across two pages there. That said, it does raise a big issue. The first day of any job for all of us is, I mean, it's usually spent several hours with IT trying on the help desk trying to work out how to get the computer started. Usually you raid the stationery cupboard. Realistically, Chris Berg, realistically, can any politician expect to get anything done in the first day?
Think back to 2010 when at the very end of the campaign, Tony Abbott went 36 hours without sleep. He's going to be sleeping on the first day. That is what he needs to do. And that is what Australia will need him to do. Have a rest and then be the Prime Minister.
We'll see, of course. Let's dive into round three.
Order!
Round three.
Order!
As we know, politics can be a brutal game, and there's been a fair few victims in this week's election campaign. There have been a number of no-shows in the last week or simple refusals to take part in community events. Scott, this one's for you. Mm-hmm. Name the three Liberal candidates who have been keeping a super low profile in Western Sydney despite being invited to a number of events, including a question and answer session with school children.
We would be talking about poor old Jamie Diaz.
Yes, James Diaz. In fact, it is being referred to as the Diaz factor, I believe.
Yeah, doing a Diaz. He's become a verb, I think.
Which, after an interview like that, is at least something to take away from that experience,
right,
isn't it?
James Diaz, Isabel White, and Kelly Scott.
They weren't the candidates I was looking for. I was looking for Andrew Nguyen, Liberal candidate for Fowler, and sitting Liberal MP for Macquarie, Louise Marcus. She didn't show for a Q&A session with Richmond.
I think there's quite a lot of them not showing.
There are there. There are actually quite a few. Thankfully, we did manage to get James Diaz for a very brief comment. He spoke to us here at RN Friday Drive, and this is what he had to say to us. Yes, thank you very much, James Diaz, for that. Lovely. Still on no-shows. Chris, this one's for you. Here's a quote from the Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd. It's entirely appropriate that she should make her own call on this, and I respect her decision entirely. Who and what is Kevin Rudd talking about there?
He's talking about Julie Gillard, who has decided not to turn up to the campaign launch on Sunday, which is probably a good call.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your response was there. What would have happened if she had have turned up?
Well, I mean, we're desperate to hear news out of Julie Gillard, and we're desperate to hear more about, you know, the internecine battles that they had. So it would have all been about her. And just as it was in 2010, when everybody was watching, you know, what face does Kevin Rudd have on at any one time, it would have been like that.
It would have been crickets and tumbleweeds and awkwardness, wouldn't it?
Very amusing for the media. But
It would have been a bit of a circus. Of course, we just heard in the news, news 7 o'clock news just before, that she's been offered a honorary professorship.
Which, oh, well, that's good.
Put a bit of a spring in a step.
Uni of Adelaide.
Yes. Well, how about that?
Pretty pleasing.
Not bad for a Friday afternoon. Yeah. Okay, I'll take that.
The timing's interesting. It shows that Ms. Gillard is moving on before the election outcome. So yeah, I'm getting on with the rest of my life, you know.
Do you have to filter everything through a spin doctor's glasses?
Soon? I like that prism, putting that through that prism.
I probably
I know.
Do,
what if
Robbie,
that's when she got
tragedy.
The job?
That's exactly right. That's why she's good at it. Sue, on that note, one for you. One of the more unique scenes in Election Week 4 was Attorney General Mark Dreyfus. He gave a press conference, and I'm going to play you a little bit of the audio from that press conference. It's your job to guess what is wrong with this situation.
Are there any questions? Thanks very much.
Admittedly, it is rather hard to ascertain what is wrong just the audio.
There were no journalists in the room. It was a pretend one.
The cameras pulled back, zoomed out, to show a room empty of journalists.
But, you know, we're talking to Chris Berg and he's not physically here with us. It feels like he
That's
is.
That's true, actually.
That's right. We're in the Sydney studios. That's true. And he is.
Listeners, we are lying to you.
Yep. It's radio, guys.
Was this a mistake?
I am so far away.
Was this a mistake on his behalf, or does this sort of thing happen all the time?
Come on, he didn't come up with the bright idea of doing it. It was obviously a setup to create the vision and the audio that everybody needed.
Is there a rented journalist association of any sort that he could have called?
Well, there's often an issue when you actually play the rented journalist line because the real journos generally work it out.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on now into round four, I believe. Oh, sorry, we're not in round four. Sorry. Gotcha. This is a bonus question that we have here. My apologies. First time I've done this show. Can you believe it? No. Okay, bonus question for all and still on no shows. This one's about the no show of a logo. Two Labor politicians have been accused of slight deception by handing out flyers with either no Labor logo on them or a very small one. Immigration Minister Tony Burke and Minister for Families Jenny Macklin, who gave out some with the logo and some without, I do believe. I think I just gave away the answer to that question. I'm terribly sorry.
It's going very well.
On this note,
thanks for helping,
his
Robbie.
His initials are Tony Burke.
On that note, we might bring a real politician into the program at this stage and try and help save me. I feel a bit like James Diaz at this moment as well. It's welcome to Laurie Ferguson, the member for Werriwa, joining us here on RN Drive this afternoon. Hello there, Laurie.
Good evening.
Just out of interest, how big is your logo on the advertising that you have for this campaign?
Look, I didn't spend much time actually measuring it, to be honest with you. Look, some of these logos are not in leaflets because they're actually within the printing and postage allowance, and there actually are rules on what you can utilise that for. So it's not always an attempt to minimise party identification. There are other reasons sometimes.
Are you heading up to the Labor launch over the weekend?
No, I'm going to be campaigning out my electorate.
Can you give us a bit of background when it comes to the election posters and putting those up? Is there a lot of argy-bargy from the people who put them up for you? Do you know when it comes to getting prime spots?
Look, I don't think so. We don't really tend to have much disputation about this. I think both sides in this camp are, and we're all pretty respectful of processes, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and how are things going in your seat?
Oh, look, that'll be very difficult. My electorate has, however, significant population growth and movement in the electorate. We're having a very big campaign around the informal vote. When people look at what the swings are, you often ignore the fact that the same people aren't necessarily voting from between elections because of people moving in and out. And also, we had a very substantial informal vote last time, about 8,000 people didn't have their votes counted. 4,000 were deliberate. The other 4,000 were accidental. So we're making a massive effort on that. And a very big campaign in regards to ethnic communication this time around, far and far greater than last time.
And Laurie Ferguson, have you chosen the sausage sizzle that you'll be attending?
No, I haven't been invited to any, as a matter of fact.
We'll hopefully change that after.
I'm an unpopular guy, obviously, at the moment.
I would have thought that, actually, on polling day, there are so many sausage sizzles at so many of the polling booths.
I'm doing one all day.
Apparently...
Yeah, there are, actually. One guy's public school, for instance, they've asked for a donation towards there. So, yeah, you're right. Government schools, they tend to use this as a major fundraiser.
They do indeed. And good luck giving them a few dollars on the weekend. Thank you very much for joining us, Laurie Ferguson.
All best, mate. Gotcha.
A member for Werriwa joining us as our little cameo tonight. Very busy at this stage, of course. And yes, all the best for that. Let's move in. We are finally here for round four question time. Yes, Chris.
Why do they have the launch like now? Like, three, when it's three quarters over. It's like the Melbourne Cup starts.
It's to do with funding.
Is it?
Mm. Chris, do you want to go into the details?
It's about how much it feels such an odd thing.
I'm with Sue. No, it's to do with travel allowance, I think it is. Because until the campaigns actually launch, they can fly on the taxpayer dime, or at least a certain percentage of it is covered by the taxpayer. So, it's all very pleasing. So the longer they wait, the better it is for us.
Oh, they could have waited till Friday, really, couldn't they?
I know, that would have been wonderful, wouldn't it? I know, and then there definitely would have been a surplus, and it would have all sorted out.
On RN Friday Drive, we're in the middle of question time. Let's move on, finally, to round four.
Order!
Round four.
Order!
Great debate.
Well, it was Debate Central this week. We had Bob Catter up against Clive Palmer, Joe Hockey versus Chris Bowen, Peter Dutton versus Tanya Plibersek, and of course, Tony Abbott and Kevin Rudd in the main arena. In this round, it's your job to fill in the blanks. Scott Wales to you first. Let's start with the Treasurer's debate.
Another Labor Treasurer saying they're going to deliver a surplus in the next term of government. Labor will never deliver a surplus.
Goodness me. What did Joe Hockey say there?
That's a wonderful swear beat.
I honestly do not know what Joe said there. I was listening very closely to the Treasurer's debate, of course, but just not that bit.
Mm. It's something to do with hogs.
Hogswill?
Hogswill was close enough. Let's listen to the answer.
Another Labor Treasurer saying they're going to deliver a surplus in the next term of government. Hogwash.
Hogwash.
Labor will never deliver a surplus.
You don't hear hogwash enough, do you?
And why has washing hogs got such a bad name?
I don't know. I mean, the hogs undoubtedly enjoy it.
I think the flying pigs were missing.
Yeah, that's right. Dirty pigs that need a wash.
Chris Berg, your turn. We're heading to the leaders' debate at Rudy Hill RSL. Fill in the blank. This one is reasonably hard, so feel free to phone a friend. You can ask Sue or Scott. Mm-hmm. Let's take a listen to this.
I used to wake up each morning quite frightened by it all. Frightened that we'd end up with... frightened that we'd end up with collapsing all over the place.
Goodness. Kevin Rudd is frightened.
You can make anything funny with beeps.
You can. They're a wonderful comedic tool. We don't use them enough on Radio National. Any ideas, Chris Berg, what has been beeped out there?
Okay, I think it is, the first one is unemployment, and I think the other one is banks collapsing all over the place.
Let's take a listen to the answer.
I used to wake up each morning quite frightened by it all. Frightened that we'd end up with double-digit unemployment. Frightened that we'd end up with small businesses collapsing all over the place.
So you were the the person that watched the debate.
Who cares about banks?
So you were saying that as far as the figures were concerned for these debates, the numbers have been diving.
Absolutely. Well, I think people have been aware that if you want to watch it on free-to-air, you can't watch it on any of the main channels. It's all going to their secondary channels and digital. ABC was obviously running it on its main channel and, having...
Ratings bonanza.
Ratings were... Let me put it this way. A lot of shows on other channels did really well.
Right. Okay. But the biggest issue is it's on at 6:30. Now, I have a little 2-year-old that I had to bath while trying to listen to this very important debate.
Did she enjoy that?
hated it. but most normal people who aren't me would just completely ignore the debate. I don't understand why they would have had it on at 6:30 in the evening.
I know, but then you could go straight to the 7:30 report, so that's what really matters.
That is very important, actually.
You're welcome back anytime, you know that, Sue. Thank you very much. It's been Doctor at Work here at the ABC.
Why do they have 3 of them? That's odd. It seems like it's overkill. I mean,
because you've been a bad person, Scott, and you've got to take your punishment.
Weren't you just saying that you listen to every parliament?
Well, no, that's right. I do.
Why is there 3 discussions for the public?
So by what I do, any debate should be fascinating.
All right, Sue Cato. Next question for you. This next piece of audio has nothing to do with the debates. Actually, try as we might, we just couldn't find anything else
interesting or exciting. Given I avoided as many of them as I could.
I was surprised to hear that, but there you go. Instead, we're going to play you an exchange from the campaign trail. Who is this and what are they talking about here?
Boss, how are you, mate?
A phone call would have been helpful.
For the national security.
4,000 jobs.
And you've said you want more jobs.
I'm happy to share. Your predecessor could share. You should learn to share.
So that was Barry O'Farrell.
With the PM,
and it was the Boff Charm School. Mm. I'm sure now that he's actually pulled that particular stunt that in his next campaign people will return the favour. It's normally not done, but, Boff's argument I hear around the chaps was that it was such a serious issue and he was very cross.
Right. And just as an added bonus for you, here's how Sky News introduced that scene on their network.
If the Prime Minister has anything to say for the cameras, but here, just some live pics of Kevin Rudd.
Yes, Freud's ears pricking up himself. All right, you're listening to Question Time here on RN Drive, and it's time for Round 5.
Order!
Round 5.
Order!
Of course, one of the key aspects of an election campaign is selling the narrative. Sue knows all about it. There are countless advisors and strategists who do their best to have that happen. And a real favourite over the years has been to sell your narrative through music. Here's the song that was playing as Tony Abbott took to the stage at the coalition launch on Sunday. Of course, we'll be seeing that in jukeboxes all over the country.
In North Korea, maybe, in the next few weeks.
Why a song? Why do they need a song? Sue, why do they need a song? Well, ignore the quiz. Answer this.
Okay, and Robbie, if you don't mind, just
go right ahead.
Can I tell you, I worked with Nick Reiner back in the late 80s, and for his big campaign, our theme song was Top Gun. And, of course, it was in the middle of all the big gun debates. And every single day I was waiting for someone in the press pack to go, Cato, why are you using Top Gun? It was, it said, da, da, da. I shouldn't sing because I have no voice, but it was perfect sort of music to bring him in and to quieten the room
down. Did you ever use Eye of the Tiger?
Not that I would ever admit
that
to.
That was Barry Unsworth.
But the reason you do it, it's setting the scene, it's creating the view. Why they use that song with the Abbott campaign is frightening, although I do notice it was a female voice.
Yes.
There's something in that.
Again. All right, we are running out of time, and as much as I'd like to
Chatting. Sorry,
ponder,
I'll stop now.
Very quickly, we have to name the song and the election campaign that it was from, or at least the year that it came from, and if possible, the party who played it. Take a little listen to this one, Scott.
There are some who play the big boys, but they've got to know the rules.
'Cause when it's tough out there and the pressure's on, you mustn't blow your cool. We're not waiting for the world. We're not waiting for the world.
I do like the way it's got "don't blow your cool" in there. Any idea what year and what election campaign that was, Scott Wales?
Was it 93?
It's got a 3 in it, but it's not 1993. Sue Cato?
I was thinking 83.
Yeah, it was Malcolm's Call to Arms.
It was Colleen Hewitt who sang the Liberals' slogan song, "We're Not Waiting." Oh, sorry, no. Yes, "We're Not Waiting for the World." Labor won that election with Bob Hawke, who became PM. Matt, Chris, this one's for you. Take a listen.
Turn on the light and we'll live again.
Dark years of Labor government have been all their own work. Let's turn on the lights by voting Liberal.
It's up to you and me.
It does sound scratchier. Chris, yeah, what year do you think it might have been from?
So by process of deduction, it's got to be 75.
It was 75. Any ideas who the singer was?
No.
Very well-known Australian singer, soul and blues singer.
Doug Parkinson.
No, it was Renee Geyer.
She's smoky in that husky voice.
No, terribly sorry, Renee. Sue, your turn now, and the final question for this week's Question Time. Take a listen to this. Tell us what year it was used in what election campaign and for whom. Of course, personally, I always enjoyed the Brian Ferry version of Let's Stick Together, but that one used in what year and who for?
I have to be really honest. I think I've blanked it out of my mind.
You've repressed it, have you?
I have. I think it's gone. I'm thinking, feeling late 80s, but...
Yeah, you're right.
It feels the scar tissues feeling kind of late 80s.
Chris, any ideas?
I'm going to guess 87.
It was 1987. Any idea who used it?
Well, so it's obviously Labor, so Hawke.
Yeah, it was Bob Hawke who beat John Howard in 1987. Let's Stick Together. Just out of interest before we finish up, is there a song that you would like to hear being used by politicians but probably won't?
Probably anything by Skrillex.
Yes, that's probably a reasonable bet, I would think.
Is it the John Cage 3 minutes of silence?
Yeah, 3 minutes 33 or whatever. 3 minutes. Yeah, yes, although James Diaz perhaps might be reverting to that at some stage.
Maybe Simply Irresistible one year.
That would demonstrate someone really confident, really knowing about where they're going and what they're doing.
Tina Turner.
Malcolm Turnbull. Malcolm Turnbull campaign.
Malcolm Turnbull could do that.
Right. Would we get Tina Turner out here to sing it live? It'd be like a return to the football.
Wouldn't
it?
Because there's a lot of women in the clip.
You're right.
There's like 20 women in the clip.
That's a great idea.
And Scott Wales, a song that you would like to hear used in an election campaign, but probably won't be.
Oh, there's just too many to narrow it down to one. Obviously, not anything by Miley Cyrus. I mean, that's been well and truly. That shark has jumped.
That shark. I'm afraid. I think.
I think if you go
to mix
through,
the metaphors,
like,
I think you're flogging a dead shark.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, what a pleasure it's been. Thank you very much to Sue Cato from Cato Council, Scott Wales from ABC News Radio, and to Chris Berg from the IPA for joining us for has been a slightly chaotic but nevertheless instalment of Question Time.
On the health report, after a week when in just a few hours several people died in road accidents where mobile phone use and inattention may have been the cause, we talk to a world authority on what's called attentional blindness and deafness. It's truly scary. Plus, helping the people who fall through the cracks in our healthcare system because the right hand doesn't know what the left one's doing. So stop driving, get off your phone and give me, Norman Swan, your complete attention by downloading a podcast from RN's website.